coming to you live like I do every night from the heart of your radio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old cheating songs. It's open to everybody out in radio land.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with me, your show host. All you got to do is text me, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Joining us now on the line, he is our returning champion. We do this every week about this time. State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Senator, how are you?
I am doing great. It is finally Friday after a busy week. Glad to not be in Montgomery, but here we go again with session starting just next week.
Yeah, you and me both. Well, you more than me, thankfully. That's why we pay you the big bucks, I guess. I have no idea what to expect. The discussion is let's move quick. No one really wants to be here for a real long time. What are you hearing there?
I'm certainly hearing that there is a plan to start off quickly and to get through with some of the more mundane, less controversial issues that may have hung us up, if you will, last time. And so, you know, we had local bills, some sunset bills, some confirmations and things like that that just really kind of bogged us down because the Democrats use them as a tool. And so I expect that we'll be doing the easy stuff first and then get into the stuff where there'll be some more conflict as we get to that point. And so that's, I think, how the tempo of session will go. You'll see some 3-day weeks early on. And when I say 3-day weeks, that means we'll be on the floor, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, passing legislation. And then we'll slow down and get into the grind, after January, probably.
Well, and, you know, when you talk about the 3-day weeks, are we burning days? Are we gaveling? I mean, I know that there's a process and some bills have to be read and, you know.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Yeah, the reason for that is really you have to fill the hopper up at the beginning, right? And so a bill has to be read the first time on the floor. Then it has to be formally assigned to a committee. Then it has to go to a committee, have a committee hearing, be voted out of committee. Then it has to get its second reading out on the floor. It takes 3 days to even get something to the floor for us to pass. And so having those 3-day weeks early on really gets legislation in place to actually have it on the special order calendar and get it to a point where we can vote on it. And so there's kind of a method to the madness of doing those 3-day weeks early on. Once we do that and we've got bills ready and in a position to pass, then it's time to slow down a little bit and get a little bit more methodical.
Is the rule change coming?
I have not seen any rule changes to date, and so I do not think that we will see those this session. Hopefully, the mess that the Democrats got us in last session will not be something that happens again. If it does, then I think the rule changes are inevitable. But let's see how everybody behaves and go from there. There still may be, and there probably still need to be some rule changes. The question is, to what extent and how far does that go? And I think that will largely be predicated on whether or not we have some of the same problems we had last session.
Well, have you gotten a sense from your Democrat loyal opposition there what the tack will be? I mean, it sounds to me like you kind of maybe not you personally, but maybe some things have been worked out behind the scenes.
Well, you know, it's interesting you ask that, and I think there's always this kind of collegial tone early on, but anything can cause a problem, and that's one of the frustrating things is that it's very difficult sometimes to figure out what may cause, you know, the spark that ignites the kindling, if you will. And so I haven't heard anything other than a very collegial good to be back in town. Everybody's happy and let's get to work. But that doesn't mean it'll last. And I've given up on trying to predict whether or not it's going to be kumbaya with our colleagues on the other side, or they're going to try to, you know, obstruct in every way, shape, form, or fashion they can. I hope that it's one instead of the other, but I expect it will be somewhere in the middle.
What, you know, so we kind of discussed the tempo here and what we expect, but, well, I mean, do you see this wrap it up early? Do we even know, will the governor, her state of the state, do we have a sense of what that's going to be about? Will she try to push something? I don't know how much political capital she has with some of you guys, but, she's still governor. I mean, like, this is all kind of a mystery.
Yeah, I think, you know, from the governor's office, one of their biggest priorities is going to be keeping budget stable and dealing with the PHIP issues and teacher pay raises. I think that's what you're going to hear in her State of the State address. I mean, obviously, that's not something she clears with me, but that's what I'm expecting from her next Tuesday night in her State of the State address. I doubt that she will have a very robust legislative package, just because it's her final year. Look, I've got a robust package of legislation that I'm trying to push, whether it's tax credits for workforce development programs statewide to really mirror some of the success we've seen here in Baldwin County and what our county school system has been able to do with Baldwin Prep. We need to do something like that statewide, to ending the mud dumping issue in Mobile Bay, to you know, really looking at again tax cuts for hardworking Alabamians. And so I've got a package of 15 to 20 different pieces of legislation that we're going to be pushing, and I'm going to be pushing hard. I hope to get them through.
Well, I wasn't there for it, but forestry gathering earlier this week, you and Leader Daniels talking about that. Kind of relay some of that discussion to us.
Yeah, you know, I continue to be just thrilled with the minority leader in the House, and I want to welcome him to the Republican Party whenever he decides that's a good thing for him. But it really underscores just how common sense tax cuts for Alabamians are. It's something that Democrats are in favor of. It's something that Republicans are in favor of. Let's continue to do those things. And so the minority leader and Senator Sessions from Grand Bay and myself were all on a panel together talking about taxes and tax cuts. You know, we've been able to cut taxes on groceries. We need to continue to cut taxes on groceries. That stands as the largest tax cut in Alabamian history. Leader Daniels is still pushing his tax cut on the overtime. And that exemption, that's been adopted by President Trump and the Republicans. We did it first. We need to get it expired. We need to get it back up and running. And we need to think about what that really means for economic growth in general, not look at it as just a liability to the general fund and to the education trust fund specifically, but how much economic growth having that money in the economy spurs and the tax receipts grow when economic growth grows. And so that's Leader Daniels' spill, and I think he's spot on. And then, of course, Senator Sessions, we need to make permanent this 7% cap on property tax increases so Alabama families can continue to afford to stay in their homes and, you know, don't end up running up huge tax bills because their property taxes, their value of their home goes up. That's just not fair. And so those are all issues that have bipartisan support that I hope to get a chance to work on this session.
You got to get some pushback on the property tax ceiling, right? I mean the typical, and then just kind of behind the scenes, not everybody's on board, it sounds like.
Well, look, we've done it. We've put the stake in the ground. My constituents are seeing their property taxes level off, right? In Baldwin County, we've seen increases of 20-30% a year. That is now capped under law at 7%. It needs to stay there, and it needs to stay there for a long time. And so I'm really interested in either removing that sunset or at least extending it out for a period of time. And look, the counties and municipalities don't like that. I understand that. But at the end of the day, having a 7% growth cap is a predictable way for counties and cities to budget. And at the end of the day, is plenty for our counties and cities to continue their operation and do well with it.
I mean, you know, kind of face value, 7% annually does sound like still pretty generous. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And when you start thinking about what's the normal return in the stock market or in an investment portfolio, you know, those financial planners will tell you 7 to 10% all day long is great. And it should be fine for our cities and counties to be able to make it on that as well. And so if your home continues to appreciate, which I hope everybody's home continues to become more valuable, that's great. But while we assess it at current value, we ought not to ever tax somebody more than 7% per year increase. And so that's plenty. These 20 and 30% increases were causing real problems for folks that own their own home. And we need government to really back up the American dream, and not be the reason somebody's losing it.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. I mentioned the governor and her state of the state. Do you see this more of being sort of a retrospective, or do you think she'll try to make another swing at something?
Look, I think it's probably more retrospective. She's in legacy building mode, and this is her last state of the state address. I expect, you know, a more subdued kind of bookended tone of, you know, I told you I was going to steady the ship, and she steadied the ship. And honestly, that's her legacy. She didn't have any huge scandals. There are a lot of projects still on the table that haven't gotten across the line. Mobile River Bridge comes to mind. This debacle of a West Alabama corridor is going to cause problems for future administrations and future legislatures. But, on the whole, there were no scandals that, you know, ended up with the governor resigning in the middle of the term. And so if you look at that as a measure of success, then there you are. It was successful.
Let's talk about your mud dumping bill. Kind of hitting the transom here. What you got in the hopper?
Well, we've got a great piece of legislation. It's always hard to figure out how to tell the federal government what to do with state law. And this is no exception, right? But Representative Rhett Marcus and I have come up with a way to use the coastal management plan that requires the assent of the Alabama Department of Environmental Management and the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. It requires the assent of those two departments in order to approve a dredge plan. And heretofore, they've been approving of this dredge plan that's been prosecuted by the Corps of Engineers that includes this open water disposal that everybody's seen the videos of. It's just awful. And so Representative Marcus and I are going to introduce a bill that defines in Alabama what beneficial use is, and specifically says that the Corps' current open water disposal method, the mud dumping, is not beneficial use. And so it will preclude the Corps of Engineers from using that method moving forward. You know, this dredging is 100% federal funded, and it'll be more expensive, but it'll be more expensive on the feds. We don't do this in a lot of other states. It's already banned in other states, and so we need to do that here. What is going on right now and about to start up again is just inexcusable. And so I'm looking forward to getting this bill passed and getting it passed quickly. I'm sure it'll be a fight, but as you and your listeners know, I've never backed away from those before, and this is the right thing to do, and I'm looking forward to getting it done.
One more thing, and we'll wind it down on this. And, you know, in Tuscaloosa, the Alabama Department of Transportation canceled the flyover right there, Highway 69 going over Skyland Boulevard, which would be the very logical end of the West Alabama corridor as it is envisioned by this governor. But, just kind of talking to different lawmakers, this may be the beginning. We may see more of this over time, more cancellations of these long-promised transportation projects.
Well, and I talked to Representative Chris England, who represents that exact district, just yesterday in Montgomery about this, and he is furious, and understandably so. Look, these are the things that that are we're going to see more of across the whole state of Alabama is going to be cancellation of projects, drawing back of projects, delaying of much needed projects because we can't afford them. These are the opportunity costs you and I have been discussing of the financing method used for West Alabama. This is it. These chickens are coming home to roost. When you spend that much state money, close to $1.5 billion of state money, without leveraging it against federal money, which would mean that we'd be paying only 20% of the cost or so, or less, then you by definition preclude yourselves from doing other worthy projects. And the fact that this one is tied on to the other one is just demonstrates how, you know, the folly of using this financing method. And it's also she can get as much of it done while she can because she doesn't think any other governor will finish the project, which has been the wisdom of the last 50 to 75 years of governors who haven't done this project either.
Well, and so, you know, we'll talk about cancellation. I mean, I-10 River Bridge, that seems to be teetering on, well, if it ever does get off the ground. There's just a lot of uncertainty there.
But there is uncertainty. And look, I mean, I don't know how many times ALDOT's announced the construction is starting soon, and it hasn't. You know, we still don't have a firm price on the bridge project. I expect that bridge to cost, you know, more than $5 billion unless they do some significant de-scoping on the project itself. And the state is just, it's hard to see, looking at the numbers, how the state affords that project when they've conducted themselves like they have by borrowing against future gas tax revenues to the tune of $730 million in West Alabama, and then continuously spending, you know, recurring gas tax revenues in West Alabama for a total, you know, project cost of somewhere around $1.5 billion. You can't do those types of things and do Mobile River and do Northern Belt Line and do 565 and do the little bridge over 69 that needs to be done in Tuscaloosa. Those are the hard decisions that have to be made, and Governor Ivey's put all of her eggs, all of the state's eggs, in the West Alabama Corridor basket at the cost of all these other projects.
Senator, got to leave it there, but we appreciate your time, and we'll probably be catching up here next week, but we'll do it all over again on next Friday.
Sounds good. I will look forward to it, sir.
State Senator Chris Elliott, ladies and gentlemen, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.